And it is 9 o'clock, time for the Plant Rant on WPCA Radio for Baker Orchards at Centuria. And here's the plant lady, Sandra. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. We made it. It was just May Day on May 1st, or Beltane, which is the cross-quarter holiday between the spring equinox and the summer solstice. I'm sure everyone's noticed the days are getting longer, and now we've had rain and heat today. It's going to be, everything's going to go crazy.
Did you know all that information, or did you look it up?
No, I know that.
What you called that day.
So I celebrate Beltane or May Day, and so May Day, traditionally, people probably know about the maypole dancing around, and then giving out, maybe you sneak up to somebody's door and hang a little posy, or leave some flowers, the May baskets, so... but no, it's a holiday I celebrate, and I did attempt a fire this year, but it was kind of wet and it was late, and I wasn't that motivated, so I sat next to the fire pit and tried to have a fire going, but typically, you know, you'll have a fire, but it's like a fertility festival for every, you know, seeds that you planted, say, so in bulk is the holiday in February between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, and that's typically the time for planting seeds. And this is when we kind of start to celebrate what's coming up and set our intentions for harvesting for later, which that holiday will come up at the end of the summer.
Isn't that what you're doing this morning, planting seeds?
Always, always planting seeds. And then just one announcement for community calendar. Tomorrow is National Naked Gardening Day. So just so everyone knows.
You looked that up on a calendar, or is that a participation
thing? I've announced that's not a participation thing. I live too close to the highway to participate in that, but I'm not opposed. No, actually, a friend, thanks, John, I know you're listening. A friend had reminded me that the holiday, and then we did look it up to confirm that it's, yes, Saturday, May 4th, so.
Okay.
Anyway, so we don't run out of time, because we always seem to. So my guest this morning is Debbie Elmer. She is an artist, and she is also very interested in native plants. She set up the outdoor garden, or outdoor classroom, rather, at Lean Elementary some years back. So good morning, Debbie.
Good morning.
Happy to have you here. Thank you.
I've been so pleased to be here.
Long time coming, because I know I reached out to you, like, long time ago, right when the classroom was fresh.
It's exciting now because it takes about 3 years for perennials to get established. So the outdoor classroom at Lean Elementary is looking wildly wonderful.
I bet it does. And my kiddo was there at the time when it got installed. It'd be nice to go back and look again.
We had 80 volunteers from the community to help build that, and I didn't know many of them. So it was wonderful to put out a call to action and see how many people felt this was really important for our students.
I love that, and that's what this is all about, is community. So it's good that you did something that brought people. Are any of those folks continuing to do any maintenance on that garden, or are the kids?
That's a great question. We're still working that out. In fact, tomorrow morning, Saturday, please wear clothes from 10 to 11. We are having a maintenance day. So we're just going to get together and weed for an hour, and many hands make light work. So we're still working out how the school can best care for it. But regardless, the space has been utilized a lot, and it remains beautiful. We have timbers out there for the kids to climb on, a hollow log that kids crawl through, and 7 different activity stations. It's a small space, but we designed it in a way that there's a lot of room for kids to have independent activities and explore the plants. We even had a mallard nesting there.
Oh, what a great experience for the kids to get to see that process.
Yeah, it used to be just a weird runoff area that had a drainage problem, and now it's this whole environment, and I'm really proud of that and proud that the kids love it so much. And it's on 3 sides, you can see it from the school, so there's windows in the classroom and 2 hallway windows, so people are using it even when they're not out there.
Right, because they can have that relaxation of even looking out the window and seeing nature, watching the grasses sway, seeing the ducks, green space. And then with the water problem, were you able then, plants are our best filtration system and ways to hold soil in place with water. Like, so were you able to kind of manage some of that with the design of the planting?
Yeah, we did it twofold. There was just some minimal grading we did to slope the water out from the building. And then we worked with Cool Acres. They brought in some moose poop, and we created a drainage pit. So we dug down pretty deep and filled it with some manure and then rain garden plants. And those roots from the plants were are absorbing a lot of the runoff because there is a downspout right there that is causing a problem. But the more plants you can have instead of just lawn turf is going to help with the rain. The Kentucky bluegrass that we generally have here, the root system on that is so minimal. But you
so
take,
shallow.
Yeah, you take a native grass and you cannot believe how deep those
roots go. Some of those can go like 6 feet, 5-6 feet. I mean, it's insane, the native plants, and that's why it's so important. And this is another thing that you're super passionate about is native plants. So you are just the best person to be putting this in and taking a space that had, like, you solved a problem, not just you created this outdoor classroom, but then you also solved a problem of the water in this space. And Water, when it's not managed, can be do a lot of damage.
Yes. There are other problems, too. My one of the reasons I got involved with the school district project is my oldest child, who's now 9, he was 3 and had intervention from the county and the school district because he was nonverbal. And so we had someone from the county come in once a week to work with our family, and she saw that I liked plants. So she asked, have you ever thought about sensory gardening? And I had no idea what that was. But 8 dump trucks worth of dirt later, I had that in my yard. And we created just this crazy garden with an above-ground culvert that we heaped dirt over. So, and then we planted that with native plants. And the boys in the neighborhood, everybody loves it.
So you created a tunnel for them to go through.
We did, yeah. It looks like a little hobbit hole.
Yes.
And then flower gardens with little bike paths through so they can interact with the plants. And lots of soft plants and mints and things they can't
destroy. Tactile. So sensory gardens, for people who don't know, anyway, and Pat, you gave me the willies because this is someday when I grow up, I want to be a horticultural therapist. So we'll see when and if how that happens. But so sensory gardens, you're going to have like the herbs, like Debbie said, the mint, where you can smell it, you can touch it. So, and a lot of this is for, you know, say a blind person who can't see, but they can smell the plant, they can touch the plant, they can taste the plant, or auditory things where you can hear the grasses sway. So these sensory gardens are for our senses. So smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, all of those things.
Yeah, in layman's terms, for me, as I understood it with Jack, he wasn't talking, so he was using his other senses more to communicate. So if I got him interacting with his body and busy and touching all these things, that it would help boost the other areas. And I couldn't believe it. It worked wonders. And it worked so well that the school had seen the progress with Jack, and they had the space, and they asked me if I would design something for their spaces.
That is amazing, because they saw a major shift with him and knew about your project that you had going on at home.
Yes.
And then reached out so that you could help other children too that would benefit.
It's really exciting. I could work an hour in my garden and my kids enjoy it, or I could work an hour at the school garden and 300 kids plus the staff, and the community is welcome to go out there too, can enjoy it. So it makes a big impact. And I think the kids feel a sense of ownership because we did a lot of the work while they were in school, and we did it deliberately. So we had some small bulldozers come in. We moved some rocks. We had volunteers cutting lumber. So the kids were looking out the window, and they would draw us pictures and write thank you signs and tape them to the windows.
Oh, honey, that's so amazing.
And then the kids' classes would come out in different shifts. And in the spring, sometimes they do some plantings out there, too. But a lot of classes are held right in the gardens now. And when I asked some of those volunteers that I didn't know, we took about 2 weeks to build it with those 80 volunteers. Some of them were really big guys I hadn't met before, and I didn't know where they came from. They're hauling rock and gravel.
The muscle.
By hand.
The muscle.
Yeah, like, why are you here? I know you're busy. This is a harvest time. And they said, this is the kind of classroom I needed as a kid.
Oh, wow. Okay, now I'm getting the willies again.
So I'm really proud that the school has that space, and hopefully they continue to embrace it and make it an extension of their classroom, and we can keep it going. But right now, those perennials are really blooming. I designed it with perennials and some hybrids, but the benefit of perennials is they're so rugged. Some of these spaces get so much sun, but we have perennials in there that are over 7 feet tall.
Yeah, your native plants. Like, if you go with, like, cup plant or compass plant, I mean, they get so big and so tall, and they can handle a dry situation or moisture. A lot of them can go either way on that.
So it's slanted there, so we have a really moist area and a very, very dry area, and then not a lot of maintenance. So I made the planting beds 12 inches or less, really skinny. But you can't believe with a native plant how much color and foliage can come out of that small space.
I love it. And it's got to be hot in there too. I mean, you kind of have a heat sink with building on three
sides. Especially.
So something that can tolerate that. Mm-hmm. And then when you mentioned about the third year, so a lot of times we say sleep, creep, leap. So your first year of your planting, we say sleep. But what's really happening there is you're not going to see a lot on top. You're going to see roots going down. I try to discourage people with, aside from like your annuals, on doing a lot of fertilizing the first year. That's going to push all this top growth because you really want those roots getting down and anchored in. And then the second year they creep and they kind of go. But that third year is when they leap and they really, really start to take off.
It's really hard when you're looking at this first year garden to imagine it's going to be beautiful because generally it looks like a dirt patch with popsicle sticks.
Yes, yes. So,
and since I've done the outdoor classroom, I've gone on to work with some other schools, and then I've also done native plantings for homeowners, generally on shorelines because the plant roots, as we mentioned, get so deep they can stabilize your shoreline and reduce erosion better than rocks can do it.
Because rocks aren't doing anything. They're preventing the water from lapping up on it to an extent, but they're not doing anything. It's very frustrating for me when I see it. Because shoreline restoration truly would be plant material, native plants with the deep roots that are going to hold that soil in place.
It holds the soil, and also I didn't know this for the longest time, that with the ice push in the spring, all that weight is pushing against your shoreline, and the rocks are just going to move and lock into place again, whereas the roots from these native grasses and flowers are going to sway. They'll kind of pull the soil back to where it was. They're going to keep your
land
where
it is. They have some flexibility.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that, and so important. Do you offer those services to people?
I do. Right now I've been doing quite a bit of lake shoreline plantings with native plants. I've been working with different counties and solving problems. There's some erosion problems that people have, and they'll call the county, and I'll work with the homeowner to design a lake shore for them. And some people are really into having pollinators. Some people are very interested in having things bloom at certain times of the year when their family's enjoying the cabin.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Because if they're only there for that 3 months or whatever, they maybe don't care about spring flowers or late fall. If they're there, they want it to be that peak.
Mm-hmm. And some peak plants season. Are very aggressive. They'll just take over. And sometimes that's not a good choice for what you want. Or you'll want a rain garden, or you'll want a direct drainage off of your property and create these swales. So there's a lot of options for maintaining your shoreline. And the roots and the plants add so much to water clarity. It's amazing. I was on the Lakes District for Amory for quite a while, and I didn't know a lot about lake clarity, but I decided to do an experiment because they were telling me how much our native plant growth in the water keeps our water clean. So I had an aquarium, and I didn't put any plants in it. And then I had an aquarium, and I filled it 75% full of plants, and I waited to see what happened. And the one with plants doesn't even need a filter. I haven't changed it in 5 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's so clear. So it's amazing. You go look at South Twin, and you're like, oh, it's so weedy. But it's also so clear. So they're not weeds. There are native plants that if we have them growing in our lakes, they will keep the invasive species like Eurasian water milfoil and other plants that we don't want out of our lakes.
Yes.
And our lakes are some of the clearest in the county because of the work that our Lakes District has done. If you go along 46 and see those drainage ponds, those are helping the water filter before it gets to the lake.
And people can re-listen to this. So when was Jeremy on? Was that in March, I think? So if you go to the archives, I had Jeremy on, and we talked about those drainage spots. And what was it, like 9 acres or 12 acres or something that is filtering? And so it's so important. And when I was a kid, even like, you know, you don't like to swim in the weeds. And finally, one day I was just like, weeds or the water plants, they're just plants that are growing in the water. It's no different than a plant that's growing on the ground. So I don't know why we get freaked out by them. And that filtration, and I love that you did that experiment. Mm-hmm. That is amazing. And, you know, when Jeremy was on, we talked about the wetlands and how they are our natural filtration system. They are what is keeping
Oh, yeah. Yep. It is like a sponge and a filter. It soaks it up and slowly seeps it out. And if you live in Amory and you might not have water out your front door, but you're still part of the watershed because all the water in our community is flowing into the watershed. And we're surrounded. I just recently looked at some aerials of our town, and we are the city of lakes, but I've lived here most of my life. I moved away for 10 years and came back, and I was looking at a map. We are completely with the Apple River and then the North Twin and South Twin and Pike Lake, having those within our city limits. You look at our downtown, it's a isthmus. I didn't know that word. Geologically, it's like it's just a strip of land in between all this water.
And what was the word?
Isthmus.
Isthmus. Well, and it's, I mean, I kind of feel like if it wasn't for dams and things, we would be in the river here. I mean, we're like literally right where we're sitting right now. So
it's really, it makes you feel like you have a lisp. I don't use it in general. Yeah, I don't say it very much. Yeah, for that reason.
So word of the day, folks, word of the day.
Another reason I've been really involved with the native plantings is our public school district. Gary Ganji had a horticultural class in high school, and I also became interested in fly fishing at the same time. So as in a small town, as it often happens, the teacher gave me his fishing pole and said, and I knew some people that are fly fishing, so I started taking that up, and then I realized this interconnectedness between when you're fly fishing, you're usually matching the hatch, which means that whatever insect is hatching at that time, you're trying to match it with your fly.
Because that's what they're going to be eating when they're popping up to...
Yeah.
Okay.
And so later in life, I become a sculptor, but the sculptor in me at that time was like, what? We're going to make things, sculpt them, and throw them out and see what bites? But then the next connection was made that these insects are hatching at the same time our native plants are blooming. So if you know what's blooming or... that's what the insects are often feeding on, or it's cyclical. It's happening at the same time. So if you can go into a river, and if you're fishing for trout, these are going to be some of the most pristine waters in the region. And then there's also plants growing on the bank, and you can see, oh, what time of year is it? What's blooming? What's likely hatching? And look in your fly box and pick out the right insect to match the flowers as well.
Yeah, and I suppose on those riverbanks, what are you seeing? Asclepias incarnata, the swamp milkweed. You're probably seeing Joe Pieweed.
Mm-hmm. Right now even is a time of season I usually don't get out in the woods, but I made, or even just for a walk in town, because you can see native plants in town. We have our state flower, the wood violet, is blooming right now. And if you go out in the woods, this week is going to be amazing for spring ephemerals, the tail end of some of them and the beginning of others. And I'm so excited with this rain and sunshine. I think I saw ferns come up overnight.
Oh, my goodness. I know. It would be cool to do like time-lapse photography, and I bet you could see stuff growing today. And I'm glad you mentioned the spring ephemerals. I want to remind people and myself also, the Sandy Cove Trail that's just north of Lions Park in St. Croix Falls is one of the best woodland wildflower walks that I've ever been on, including compared to like Eloise Butler. I mean, it is phenomenal. And if you go each week, you'll see new things, and it's loaded. So I need to, this is my super busy time, but I always try to get down there like once a week during the spring. So I'm so glad you brought spring ephemerals up, because I get wrapped up in you know, the spring season when my life goes from
that's
zero
exactly
to 100 in a hurry.
That's exactly what happens to me.
But to take that time, it's a great
this
walk.
This year I really slowed down and walked. Well, I don't like hiking fast or speed walking, or basically I don't like exercise. So I just walk around the woods and poke things with a stick, which is I enjoy.
Yes, absolutely.
But I haven't explored those parks that you mentioned, and I really want to. But could you explain ephemerals for everyone so they know what that
means? Yeah, so spring ephemeral is before the canopy takes off in the woods, there'll be plants that pop up and they have a quick life cycle of coming up and blooming fast, and then that canopy fills in, and then they actually die back to the ground. So when I was managing Funky Gardens when we were still in business, we sold spring ephemerals. Which is fun, because later in the year, you're basically selling someone like a pot of dirt. You're like, no, really, it's in there, I promise. So like Dutchman's breeches. I'm trying to think what else.
I have some Virginia bluebells I naturalized under my white pine in my yard in the city. And so if you walk by my house this week, they're going to be blooming, and I'll be very proud.
I want some of those.
But they do just disappear.
So they disappear, like you wouldn't even know that they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
the trilliums, the jack in the pulpit, the trout lily.
Yes. And you can see all those if you take a walk in the woods.
I also, if it's intimidating to you, something that's fun for me is to completely make up every name of every plant.
Yes, and Latinize it.
You don't have to know the names of plants to enjoy them. You can just go out and see what changed since last time I was here. What didn't I notice that I notice now? And then the animals that are out there, too, they're all doing their own thing. Something I really like, this is phenology calendars. Have you done anything with phenology calendar?
No, tell me more.
So I gave myself goosebumps.
I love learning. So, it's so fun.
The word phenology sounds a lot like phrenology. Totally different. Phrenology is the study of the bumps on your head.
Yes.
So phenology is the study of the seasons and what's happening every month of the year. And with children and adults, sometimes they keep a phenology notebook, or you can do, it's, they generally make it in a circle, so you just draw all the animals and plants that you see during that month, and or you create a diary, what's happening in the natural world, and then you compare it to the next year.
Yes, I used to do journals like that, like when the first dandelion's up, or when the last dandelion I saw, or when I saw the last rose, and sometimes it's amazing, because it's December, and you're seeing a rose bloom, or a dandelion, and
And there's ones from years back, and I know there's a postman up in northern Minnesota. He's been doing one for such a long time, and it just to look back over that data over the years and to remember what you were doing and what's happening in the natural world. It's just something people really enjoy doing.
Well, and like this year with the early sap harvest, I mean, oh my goodness, I don't think it had been that warm in, say, January, February since, like, what was it, 1946 or something? And so it's been... keeping track of the seasons.
Like I think it helps us be more present and just calm down to just, okay, there's a lot going on in my life and things, but where am I? What's happening?
Well, and it's like me celebrating the cycles of the year. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you really are paying attention. And it's really, it's kind of like every 6 weeks because we go, you know, we've got the four quarters of the solstices and the equinox, but then you have these cross quarters in between. And it's all cyclical and what's happening. And of course the southern hemisphere is the opposite, so they're celebrating Samhain or Halloween, what we call, and you know they're finishing up their year and getting ready to go into the dark time, whereas up here we're in the opposite. So it's,
I didn't realize how much so many things depended on the calendar, these seasons. And I've been studying the Torah a little bit, the Jewish scripture, and so much of it reflects back on the moon cycles too. And I hadn't known that. And it's just really interesting. And I think looking at these native wonders that we have right here in Amory and in the region just helps us pay more attention and be more present and appreciate things a lot more.
I like it. So get out. Today is a wonderful day to be outside and take a walk. And with that rain, and now it's warm, even just looking across the parking lot, like there's so many beautiful dandelions over there right now. Like all of a sudden the other day I looked around my yard, I'm like, holy smokes, there was like one, you know, a week ago. And now like they're everywhere, and I just love it. I just love it. And there's bees on the farm, so it's good for them. And, you know, this no-mow May thing, like the dandelions bounce back really quick. The main thing is like just don't put herbicide down. Like, don't put herbicide down, people. Anyway, I always have to get my little...
Well, you can plant... If you have a problem with some kind of plant, there's generally a native that you can plant to keep those away. Dandelions are a different issue, but...
But so many things, and we've talked about this before on the show, it's like plantain and dandelions usually are... They are indicating that you have compaction and that the soil needs to get broken up. And, like, they're there because of an underlying situation that...
Mm-hmm.
But... Oh my God, this was so great. So you have a couple books with, do you want to talk about these at all?
Last fall, I took a class through Community Ed here in Amory. It was with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and I didn't know, and I would assume many of the people here don't know, that there's a seed harvest station over in Star Prairie. Did you know this?
No.
The seed farm manager's name is Alex, and we harvest a lot of the seed, at least for this region of Wisconsin, for our state lands. So
harvesting seeds of native plants. So they're growing up native plant species, and then there's a harvesting day. Okay.
Yes, but not just a day, because these seeds mature at different times in the fall. And so if you become, it's called a prairie enthusiast, they have a great network, or you can just email over to the Alex at the seed farm. you get notifications as to what seeds are ready, and then you meet at a certain location and everybody goes out and collects seeds. And then we go and we put them in kiddie pools. There's a lot of kiddie pools in this pole barn, which I didn't anticipate this, and weird stuff gets me excited. So we have kiddie pools and kiddie pools. There's like 20 kiddie pools full of native seed, all separated by plant species. And then when it's at the right drying, so it doesn't mold,
right,
then we sort them and bag them and put them in a seed vault, which is a wire cage, so the rodents can't get to them.
Yes.
And then those are dispersed. You'll have just a giant bag of big blue stem. Or it's just blazing star.
And then that gets
star.
Distributed in the spring to places, or are they?
It does. I think they're sending it over the fall. They're planning seed mixes for the different locations. And so I believe it's Alex who helps determine what ratio of what seed gets put in the different mixes.
Sure.
And if they have land that needs to be seeded back into a native area, they have these big machines that they can use to seed those areas. Sometimes it's hand seeded. It's fascinating. There's public lands over there you can walk to. Just, I had no idea that was here, and it's just a great resource and a beautiful way to see how natives are part of our community.
And so, is there a place people can go and walk it? Like, where is this the spot that's like off of M?
I'm terrible with directions. It's a brown pole shed. They're just putting up a sign, but it's been there for a while. It's on the top of the hill outside of Prairie Farm.
Star Prairie. Yep. So, but people can go and walk and look at these?
Yes, you can walk the land because it's public, and you can become part of the group that helps with it too, to be a volunteer. And I think they're going to continue classes through community ed.
So people could look up in the community ed information and get more information or
context. Correct. It's really inexpensive. The biggest thing that they want is outreach. So they're working on that more. And if you're interested in the native plants, Alex introduced me to the Tall Grass Prairie. It's an organization that does a lot of writing on native plants. And just before anyone was here, what was growing? What's the history of these plants? And when you're driving, you're seeing some of these things. The big tall grasses along the road, they used to be called turkey foot because they have like a three-prong seed head.
Yes.
That's our big blue stem. And it's giant. And right now I'm even seeing fields full of it still, just dried out. And it's 5 to 7 feet tall.
Can you imagine like back in the day, like you're walking through where... like pioneers, and like you're going through this grass that's so tall you can't even see over.
I think all that's really fun to imagine, and how they use the plants, and we still have them here. It's kind of sentimental. It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, and to get back to honor our native, like here we're on the native land of the Anishinaabe, and we need to remember and honor that, because that is the history of the land here.
Well, and they certainly knew all their plants. And they were important to their lifestyle. And how are these plants important to us still?
Well, their spirituality and their medicine and lots of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This week's going to be a great week to get out. So I encourage everybody to. I'm so excited to get back in the woods because it's going to have changed just in 4 days. So I know it doesn't look like much out there right now, but I encourage you to walk around, see what you see, and then go back in a few days. It just changes so much.
Even just your own gardens. I mean, I like to go every day and walk around my little babies and see who's popped up and who's blooming. And
I took pictures of a weed downtown that was growing outside of a building because I thought it was beautiful, and I kept track of it the whole year. It's kind of embarrassing. But you can watch plants anywhere.
Right. Yes. And it's so good for us. It's just so good. And it's good for the plants. It helps plants. So so tell me about the one other book.
Oh, there's another book here.
Before we're done.
I got in town at a used bookstore by Alan Eckhart. It's called Wild Season, and the time is the month of May, a place, a lake, and the story is survival in nature. And I had read it a while back, and it's how in a lake there's all this activity happening as the spring comes. The frogs are coming out of the soil. They've been almost... their heartbeat is almost slowed, almost frozen in time, and now they're emerging, and the plants are starting to grow, and what's happening between all these animals, and what's happening with the weather, and it's just, you wouldn't think you could write an entire book, and it'd be very interesting, but I was hooked on it. I hope to maybe read that out loud and have it available for audio during the month of May, read by a campfire by a lake. So I have some goals.
I love it. Well, May's time goes by quick.
So it does. We got to get on it. I'm calendaring it.
Get going. Well, thank you, Debbie, so much. Debbie Elmer, folks, local artist and steward of the earth and native plant person. I really appreciate you coming in. This has been waiting for this for like 5 years or something that I wanted to do.
Thank you. This was so fun.
I'm glad. And thank you to Baker Orchard for sponsoring and supporting Plant Rant. I do not have a guest lined up for June, so that'll be a surprise. That'll be my 6th year anniversary of Plant Rant. Wow. And then in July, we'll have Bill on again from Z Orchard to talk about bees. So, all right. Thank you.